welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast presented by Xfinity. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Sunday evening. Joining me from down 8th Avenue here in New York City, where I will be covering the New York Knickerbockers against the Indiana Pacers. Mr. Bontemps will be joining me for game one on Monday, and then he's headed up for Boston Celtics. Who are they playing, Bontemps? I forget.
Playing the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Extended
Cavs corner today, folks. Extended Cavs corner. Extended Cavs corner for the next week. Maybe more. We'll see.
Maybe less.
I'll say only about a week.
Maybe less. All right. Joining us from Dallas, Texas, where he's going to be Mr. I-35 for the foreseeable future. Of course, he doesn't actually drive it. It's Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners. Hoping for those upgrades. Hoping for those upgrades so I can sit in first class for 30 minutes.
Yeah, that's one of those flights, Dallas to Oklahoma City, where you're legitimately taxiing longer than you're flying, depending on what runway you're going out of at DFW. But all right, we'll get to that a little bit later. Are we going to start with Game 7, Cavs Magic?
No. No, we'll get to it, though.
We are not.
Let's start with a series that we're really excited about, and none of us are covering the other three.
To be clear, Mr. Cavs Corner was like, we aren't starting with Cavs Corner, right? It's like,
I mean,
let's start with something else.
We'll talk about the Cavs in a minute, but like, if you're a Cavs fan, you're excited. If you're a basketball fan, it was a rough watch. however, it was not a rough watch on Saturday night out in Denver.
Nope.
Where the Ant-Man, 43, terrific fourth quarter. For the first time in the last 2 years, it was like, wait a minute. Like, the Nuggets don't have the answer. You know, the Nuggets would have lost games, obviously, but you never thought they didn't have the answer.
Never trailed the series.
Of course not. And even when they did lose, you're like, well, they ain't losing four of these. The Wolves are 5-0 in this postseason. And their plus minus in these, their second half plus minus in these games has been amazing. And by the way, speaking of plus minus, not that we're going to overreact to game one, because that's a big rule. We don't overreact to game one. Mm-hmm. I think Jokic was minus 12. I mean, typically, Jokic is on the court. They're always in the plus, and then it's a matter of whether they can keep their head above water when he's off the court.
Yeah, this one was the inverse.
Jokic minus 12. I think they were plus 5 or something like that when he was off. And what they did in this game, thanks to stats and info tracking, like, they got a whole bunch of numbers, but the Wolves went at Jamal Murray. They put him in pick and roll after pick and roll after pick and roll. That was their offensive strategy, testing that knee, testing that calf. Their defensive strategy, largely put one of the other bigs on Jokic and have Rudy Gobert protect that rim.
I got a couple stats on both of those things from Stats Williams. So let's start with Jamal Murray in the pick and roll. So in this game, on ball screens, when Jamal Murray was defending the ball handler and Jokic was defending the screener, the Nuggets gave up over 2 points per screen. 2.13 points on 12 screens.
Okay, hold on. Let's stop 1 second.
So people understand, that means that on every screen that was set, Minnesota scored at least 2.1 points. On average, or they scored 2.1 points on average. It means on sometimes they got way more than that. And it means they got more than a bucket every possession.
And generally, any play, whether it's a post up, whether it's a mid-range shot, whether it's, you know, whatever, any play that generates you 1 point per possession is considered not bad. Anything over that, 1.2, 1.4, you're hammering that.
Yeah, you're cooking. I mean, just think of offensive ratings. If it's 1.20, it's historically dominant.
Right.
1.2 per possession.
Right. We're talking 213 then. So
2.1 means you're scoring basically every possession you're getting.
So that was,
and that's basically what they're basically saying is we're taking their two best players and we're bringing them into action, because whoever Jokic was guarding, I assume was Gobert most of the time. I didn't look track at that quickly. Whoever Jokic is guarding, he's coming up. And by the way, Ant didn't exactly struggle when Kentavious Caldwell-Pope was on him.
Well,
either.
we got some more on these two. So a bunch of these are all from Stats Williams. So that was with Murray and Jokic in it. Jamal Murray, you mentioned them picking on him. He defended 47 ball screen actions in the game. Minnesota scored 1.74 points per direct screen. Again, crazy efficiency. When Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Nikola Jokic were in pick and rolls, 1.88 points per direct action. Nikola Jokic in the game gave up 1.74 points per direct screen action on over 30 ball screens. He's done that, and he's got defended at least 30 ball screens in 361 games in his career. It was the second worst number he's given up in a game. So they put them in a ton of pick and rolls, and they skewered him on it throughout the game. Now, this was the other thing that was really interesting, and this is some trivia for you guys.
And now, to present today's trivia question, the whiz of the quiz, Tim Bontemps.
Fun little trivia question. Who are the five best players at in terms of bringing the ball up? Guy brings the ball up the court. Teams have the highest offensive rating in the league this year.
Because you're asking it that way, I'm going to say Ant.
Ant is not in the top five.
Okay, well, I'm going to say Luka.
Luka's not in the top five.
Maxi.
Not in the top five.
Jay?
Not in the top five.
What the hell kind of question is this?
I would assume Jamal Murray.
Jamal Murray, not in the top five.
Joker.
So Nikola Jokic is third. Now,
okay. Mike Conley.
Mike Conley is not in the top five. The top five are kind of funny. Tatum is second. Devin Booker is fourth. Pascal Siakam is fifth. The number one guy is Peyton Pritchard, who you guys obviously never would have guessed for a thousand reasons. But that's less of the interesting thing. I bring up the stat because there was something interesting that went on in this game. A lot of times, and Nate Duncan, I will credit him for having me ask Stats Williams about this. Nikola Jokic will bring the ball up often for Denver, right? And I noticed during the game something that Nate also pointed out on his pod, which was that you saw Karl Anthony Towns look like over half court sometimes, kind of pressuring Jokic, right? Like they, or Naz Reid, like they would be up on the other side of half court trying to get into Jokic.
Basically played him like a guard. So pressuring him like a guard.
So this is the
7 foot, 285 pound guard.
So this is the interesting thing about that. And again, I just to give Chris Finch and his staff some credit for how they prepared for this game. And by the way, they have a couple of guys in Chris Finch and Mike Inori who were both in Denver for a while, and it looked like they had things scouted out pretty well for this game. So Nikola Jokic, basically 126 offensive rating, point per possession rating, when he brings the ball up the court.
Pretty good.
In the Lakers series, it was 1.15. Or 115 per 100 not possessions.
Not as good, but not great.
Well, for a half-court offense, that's pretty awesome. That's
but it's any time he brings the ball up to court, though. Could be transition, could be whatever. In this game, it was an even one. And the most interesting and the most interesting part is there were seven possessions where he got picked up in the backcourt, and they scored 0.7 points per possession on those, which, again, isn't a ton of possessions, but still – it was an interesting little
unmasks
wrinkle.
Their strategy is what it is.
Yes. It was an interesting thing to see them do. And I just think a lot of the credit for this game, like, yeah, obviously Ant was great. He hit a bunch of tough shots. They played fantastically. I thought Minnesota's coaching staff did a phenomenal job in this game, really had a great game plan in place. And these guys went out and executed it. And you could see on both ends, they really had Denver in a bind in a lot of different ways.
Well, they've been working 2 years for this series. From the moment they hired Tim Connelly, I know that maybe Tim Connelly wasn't hired, beat Denver because Denver wasn't the champs yet, but Tim Connelly's maneuvers were to replicate as much as he could. He can't replicate Jokic, but to replicate the type of team he had in Denver.
Well, and if anybody don't know how to beat Denver, it's going to be the guy that built the team.
Right. And then obviously they had great continuity on their roster year over year. All these guys prepared and played for Denver in the playoffs last year. And like, the connections.
Not all of them. Jaden McDaniels was not part of that series. Naz Reid was not part of that series. Those
that's true.
Pretty important pieces that they have.
That's true. By the way, as far as the connections between Denver, you know, you talked about Mike Inori and Chris Finch, Monty Morris.
That's right.
Not that Monty Morris is going to play a big role here, but this is a guy
who played a big role in the second half. I mean, him coming in, he gave them some really good minutes in the third quarter after they had struggled in that stretch with him off the bench, not playing in the first half.
And speaking of Jaden McDaniels, this was and I don't want to overreact to individual games, but he was 0-7.
Yeah.
Which is what the nickname of the Cavs Magic series should have been. 0-7. he was 0-7, which sounds awful.
What a slaying. Jeez.
Plus 14. So that just illustrates what he's able to do defensively. Particularly one of the things about this last series was that Michael Porter slayed the Lakers.
Yes.
And he had a great game here too. He had a very good shooting game here. But when you have that size on the perimeter, that enables you to use it against Porter. Porter has such a huge size advantage on just about every three that comes over there, or even a lot of fours. And they have Jaden McDaniels they can use on him. So there's a question, McMahon. This, it's like the the Wolves shot the ball very well too. They, you know, they had a shot 52% from the field. They didn't make a ton of threes, but they shot pretty well from three.
Ant shot the hell out of the ball.
Ant. Well, Ant keeps shooting, keeps making shots with guys blanketed on top of him.
He's making an insane number of contested jumpers, which.
So, I mean, we just spent the first 10 minutes here talking about the game plan that they employed. Not a hot shooting night, but it was also a hot shooting night. So is the game plan replicable? Is this something that they can do three more times?
Well, listen, they were able to make Joker uncomfortable, which I don't know that you can do that repeatedly. Joker's so smart. He's going to figure things out. But this is the one team or one of very few teams that can guard him with size. And it's the only team that can guard him with size and have a soon-to-be four-time defensive player of the year patrolling the back line and snuffing out that lob that he loves to throw to Aaron Gordon. That was a huge play.
Huge.
And then, you know, you've got Jane McDaniels all over Michael Porter Jr. Ant is an awesome defender. I thought the tone for this game was set right off the bat where he comes out hitting everything and smothering Jamal Murray. And,
yep.
You know, it's interesting because you talk about the strategy of targeting Jamal Murray and all the success that they had doing that offensively. To me, that's as much a defensive strategy almost as it is an offensive strategy, because what you're doing is just like you see teams do with Luka or, you know, name whatever elite scorer. You're trying to make sure this guy does not have legs in the fourth quarter, especially Jamal Murray, who's been dealing with a calf injury. You go after him and make him work his ass off on offense. And are you going to have juice in your legs to hit those game-winning shots like you did against the Lakers? I don't know. It's going to be tough. So does the best defensive team in the league have the potential to really make the Nuggets work for everything they get offensively? Absolutely. Am I going to sit here and doubt that Joker is going to figure out a way to do that well enough to win four games of the next six? I'm not ready to do that. But, man, whew, they got their hands full. And obviously a lot of this is about the Timberwolves being the best defensive team in the league. And weird, when does the whole narrative of Gobert getting played off the court start? Because that sure as hell hasn't happened so far in these playoffs as they've come out of the gates with five wins. It's kind of funny.
Well, I'll just go back to – I went to training camp at the beginning of last season. I went to the Wolves training camp. And I was highly skeptical, like anybody, of this working. And by the way, it just didn't work the first year, although Karl Towns was injured for basically three-fourths of it. And I had this long conversation with Chris Finch, like on day three of training camp. And he was dogmatic about how this was going to work. And he was like, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of D'Antoni when they traded for Chris Paul, and they had Chris Paul and James Harden. And D'Antoni was like, look, I know what I'm doing. We're going to make this work. And it did, at least for a short time.
The first year, there were 65 wins.
Right. Chris Finch was explaining to me, like, here's what we're going to do. And here's what Carl, and that was before we even knew with Naz Reid. I mean, Naz Reid was sort of an also-ran on their bench at that time. He's like, no, it's going to work because we're going to do this, this, and this. And you have Carl Towns out there. You do not take him off the court. You put him and stretch the floor, and we're going to be able to do this and that. And like, this is their vision. This is their vision that they've had for a long time. This is the vision Tim Connelly had when he got there. This is the vision that Tim Connelly didn't hire Chris Finch. You see how unheard of this is? First off, it's difficult to get a coach to have a vision that matches the front office, even when they're buddy-buddy.
Yeah.
Then the idea that the front office actually acquires players that fit the coach's vision and can stick with that. Like, that's hard. And the idea that the coach and a lot of the roster is pre-existing, that's harder. And so, but this has been their vision for a long time, and they've been doing it for this series.
Well, and then they go out and they make the deal to get Mike Conley and Nickeil Alexander-Walker, which was a total afterthought in that deal. And Alexander-Walker wasn't great in game one, was awesome in the series before that. But one way that you do have a chance of being successful is you draft a guy number one overall, and by the time he's 22 years old, he's in the conversation for the best two-way player in the game.
That is true.
And if he wasn't already before these playoffs, Anthony Edwards absolutely is now. And you saw the stat, consecutive 40-point games in the playoffs at age 22 or younger. The list is Anthony Edwards and Kobe Bryant. Three straight 35-point games, age 22 or younger. There's a little bit more company there. It's Anthony Edwards, Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, Lou Alcindor before he became Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Stats Williams specials, obviously. But, dude, that's Anthony Edwards, and he's a dominant defensive player. And he has, like, is he the leader of the team? I don't know. He's the face of the franchise, though, and he absolutely impacts the culture. And his culture is he rips your heart out with a smile on his face. He is pure joy and ruthlessness, and that is one hell of a combination. I mean, when he's sitting there talking on the bench, talking about, I'm locked in, you know, let's go, I'm here. And then he goes out and lights the world up and shuts down the other team's best perimeter player. I don't know if you're following him, but you're damn sure loving playing with that guy. You're having a ton of fun playing with that guy. 22 years old, man, and like looks like a dude who, you know, remember when we were having the conversation, who's the next American MVP? He's at the top of that conversation for sure. Face of the league, and he is arriving right now at that level. If he wasn't, you know, if there was any question, no, he's at that level right now.
Well, so a couple things. Obviously, I think his leadership has been pretty impressive. You've seen him shepherd along Carl Towns and sort of make him still feel like he's right there with him atop the food chain with this team, even though it's obvious from the outside that that is no longer the case and that there's a pretty clear hierarchy there. The other thing is the reason this is working this year is because Rudy Gobert is back to being Rudy Gobert again. And last year he did not look like Rudy Gobert. His mobility was not nearly as good. He didn't look good at the World Cup. The reason we were all skeptical mainly was because we didn't know if Rudy Gobert could do this anymore. And now Rudy Gobert this year has been the best defensive player in the league. He's flying around all over the place on the court. You mentioned him playing on Aaron Gordon. I thought that was really smart. Again, that they had him playing on Aaron Gordon, who's basically at this point a non-shooting four, like we've talked about a bunch. And you can make up for that because you've got him next to Nikola Jokic. But Jokic is constantly looking for that lob. And by having Rudy Gobert back there, it either negated the lob from being thrown, or when he did try to throw it, Rudy could get in the way. And it really messed up what Denver was trying to do. Reason why, Nikola Jokic took 25 shots in this game. Nikola Jokic doesn't want to shoot the ball 25 times. He wants to shoot the ball 15 times ball around. So over the last two playoffs, I looked this up while McMahon was yapping. He shot the ball 25 or more times, six times. Denver's 2-4 in those games over the last 2 years.
Mike Brown on during the finals last year and said, hey, what the hell do you do with this guy? And he said, there are no good answers, but what you try to do is make him one-dimensional offensively. And the dimension you want to choose is make him a scorer, because if you make him a scorer and take away the facilitating, then you're taking away the rhythm of the other guys. You might be taking away with the rhythm. You might be taking away the energy on the other end. And like, Joker's good enough where he can beat you purely as a scorer, but you're doomed if he's scoring and facilitating and everybody's involved and touching the ball. Like, you can't beat the Nuggets if he's scoring and facilitating, and he's having one of these, you know, 28, 22, 16 type of games that he will have. So if you can make him as one-dimensional as possible, you're going to have a chance. And like this whole thing of, well, if Gobert's a four-time defense player of the year, he should shut Joker down. Like, okay, dude, that's cool. But the point is, let's not see how many points you can limit that guy. The point is you're trying to win a basketball game and a playoff series. And the best way to do that is to have Rudy in a situation where he can impact the entire floor. And look, the other little thing, you're not shutting Joker down. Rudy's not. Bam Adebayo's not. Anthony Davis isn't. So if you can put Rudy in a situation where he can not have to be the primary defender on Joker, be able to help on him and impact everybody else, you want to do that. And as much as Joker scored, by his standards, was extremely inefficient in that game.
Yeah, of course. 11 for 25. And the other thing real quick, you made the joke about Gobert getting played off the court. Travis, it goes back to the Utah series against the Clippers. All the people who said that never understood that the actual issue in that series was that Rudy Gobert was trying to guard five guys at once because he was playing out there with four players on the perimeter for the Jazz who couldn't stop anybody. Mm-hmm. And if you watch the last series, Jamal Murray did not shoot the ball very well overall. I think he shot 42% overall, 29% from three. But when he got going and he hit the game-winning shots against the Lakers, it's because he could comfortably get wherever he wanted to go because there wasn't a single guy on the Lakers who could give him any trouble. And with Anthony Edwards and Jalen McDaniels in particular, Minnesota has two elite guys defensively that can give him a lot of trouble. And again, in this game, he didn't score in the first half. He ends up with 17 points on 6 or 14 shooting, 4 assists. Pedestrian game, totally fine. And like, yes, he's dealing with the calf injury also, obviously, but sledding is going to be a lot tougher going against this Minnesota team than it was against a Laker team that just didn't have any perimeter athleticism.
Tuesday, the Defensive Player of the Year is being announced. The Timberwolves and Nuggets are off. I like Rudy's chances.
I am pre-filing my news story about Rudy Gobert tying the record for Defensive Player of the Year honor. I'm filing that before I get on a flight to Oklahoma City tomorrow. Pretty sure he's going to win. By the way, Rudy can't guard on the perimeter thing. I asked Stats Williams, because I am writing this thing, hey, load me up on great stats. One of those stats, he allowed the fewest points per direct isolation among players to defend at least 175 ISOs in the league this year. Oh, well, this is new. His last several years in Utah, there are similar numbers. It's never been about his ability to guard on the perimeter. It's about, as Bontemps said, his ability to guard all five guys.
The Rookie of the Year will be announced on Monday, and I believe San Antonio has some media activity scheduled.
Yeah, we know what's going on there. All right, and we know who's winning MVP, and we know who's winning MVP later in the week.
Thursday, I believe, is when that will be. I don't think the Nuggets are playing.
Wednesday.
Oh, is it Wednesday? I thought it was Thursday.
I think it's Wednesday. Whatever day it is, Denver ain't playing.
The question is, will the MVP be down 0-2 at that point?
It's true.
Well, I'm still giving maximum respect to Denver. My biggest thing is, was this a game plan was this a genius game plan, or was it just a one-off? And that's one of the things that you really guard against, because I promise you, if you went back and listened to some of the things, that were being said or written after game one of the first round.
Yeah.
Some of them, you got some egg on your face. I don't mean but you know.
No, it was a long, tough series.
Yes.
The thing to watch, home team loses game one, wins game two in a blowout the vast majority of the time because they come back, they have a ton of urgency, they win the game. I expect Denver to win this game comfortably just because of that, not because I don't think it's going to be a long series. If this is a nail biter, or if Minnesota does win the game, or it's right down to the buzzer and Denver squeaks one out, that's, I think, especially when you really got to start to look at it and be like, man, does Minnesota really have something dialed in here?
That situation reminds me of a series I covered once, and it's apropos because it was Cavs Magic, the 2009 Eastern Conference Finals. That included one of the great shots of LeBron's career, where he hit the buzzer beater in game two to tie the series. And when all the confetti was done falling and all the replays were done falling and the arena was empty, I remember thinking, Cavs are in trouble. And they lost that series 4-2. And so we'll see whether Nuggets are in trouble. Probably not. But go ahead, McMahon.
Well, what was interesting about this one, the Nuggets have yet to get off to a good start in these playoffs, right? And they kind of, you know, against the Lakers, all right, we'll turn it on sometime in the third quarter. It's cool. Against the Nuggets, they got punched in the mouth and responded right away. And they weren't able to finish it off, but, you know, they woke up right away. And I'm pretty sure the Nuggets realized, hey, we can't be kind of cool in this series. I mean, they're going to have to play well to win this series. That wasn't necessarily the case in the first round.
Yeah.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket. With Vivid Seat Rewards, score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's the roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Okay, to the game seven that was played on Sunday. Cavs win by 12.
Cavs Corner, sponsored by the second round of the playoffs.
This is like arrived. This is like the Cavs cul-de-sac. It's a little bit more than a corner today.
Oh. Hey, he said cul-de-sac. That means they've turned the corner.
We'll see about that.
Turn the corner heading for a dead end, but hey, it's okay.
Jeez. Cleveland's going to hate us even more than they already hate me after all this.
This is the thing. The Cavs have not won a playoff series without LeBron since the 90s. They were extremely embarrassed and humbled by what happened in the series last year where they had the higher seed in home court against the Knicks.
They lost in five for people that don't remember, though.
They lost in five. Jared Allen, who was their best player the first four games of the series and was their second best player for the whole season, missed the last three games of the series with a rib injury.
He was the best player in the first two games. They had no best player in the next two.
By the way, the Cavs got outscored in this. Was like by six.
By 31. It was the fourth wow. Worst scoring margin for a series winner ever.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay. Fair point. So what I want to emphasize here is the Cavs did not need to win this series riding on a white stallion down the court, you know, accepting rose petals. They just had to win it. Having said that, this was a real tough series to watch and a real tough game to watch. And my two big takeaways from it before we really get into it, Donovan Mitchell absolutely positively won the Cavs the series. Whatever you want to say about his playoff career.
Well, here's all you got to say. The record for point totals in game six and seven combined of a series, Allen Iverson scored 90 in the conference finals in 2001 when the Sixers beat the Bucks.
He was MVP.
Donovan Mitchell scored 89 over the last two games of the series. Right. That's all you got to say. Yeah. Nothing else matters.
One thing you can say about Donovan's playoff track record is he has had some massive scoring games in the playoffs. Multiple.
He's had 50-point games, including game six on Friday. Where
lost two of them, but still.
The fourth quarter was an abomination on Friday night. I'm not
sure. The last five quarters of the series might be.
I'm not even sure the Cavs qualified as having five guys on the court at the end of the game in game six, because there were guys who I think were like trying to
one massacre after another, big man.
They were trying to sort of step onto the sideline so nobody would throw them the ball and they wouldn't be expected to do anything. Mm-hmm. Now, Donovan was tremendous and pretty efficient. He wasn't as efficient on Sunday, but there was nothing about Sunday that was efficient.
He got it done.
That's all that matters is they got it done. And the Cavs were under significant pressure to improve this season. And they did some stuff to make sure they got a weaker opponent in round one.
They embarrassed themselves to get a weaker opponent in round one. Let's just call it like it is.
And
by the way, I don't even think they got a weaker opponent. That's the craziest part. I think they would have had a lot easier time with Indiana than they did with this Orlando team.
Well, I will say this, like the way Orlando played and they defended. And we're going to talk about them in a minute. And Jalen Suggs, this was sort of an arrival, not offensively.
They had a rough one today shooting the ball. But
defensively.
He showed why he's going to be on a lot of people, including mine, all defensive teams.
Including
he's awesome.
Mine. He had a rival 2 weeks here.
Yeah. He had a rival season.
But I just want to say, like, the Sixers would have pummeled the Magic. I think, and this is going to get me in some water.
Ooh, aggregators alert.
I think the Warriors would have pummeled the Magic. They just couldn't do anything.
Neither one of these teams exactly covered themselves in glory over the seven games.
The Magic are a bad offensive team.
Ooh.
They're a bad team.
They got some work to do to get to bad, buddy.
And some of it's going to be development of young players, which Suggs took a leap this year, but he's a 3-and-D guy, right? Banchero is having to carry the offense. He's not going to be efficient as
Banchero was pretty good. That was the other thing I was going to take away. Paolo Banchero, he was not afraid of this game.
No.
He
not played efficient, but not afraid.
He played with confidence. He played with confidence throughout the series. He averaged 27 points in the series, shot 46%, 9 rebounds.
But again, assists. But to McMahon's point, he was 10 for 28 today.
Yeah.
And Jalen Suggs and Franz Wagner were 3 for 28, the worst combined field goal percentage by a pair of teammates in the history of the league in a game 7. According to Stats Williams.
Franz Wagner was 1 of 15.
They're a rebuilding team. I'm not going to say they overachieved, but they certainly exceeded expectations to the point they're a rebuilding team.
100%.
Major progress would have been a play-in berth. They got the fifth seed. They're
100%.
Now they've got $32 million in cap space that can expand them much more depending on what they do with some options and non-guarantees, et cetera, et cetera. They are a team that desperately needs a go-to guy or at least a 1B.
They need somebody who's creating shots for these guys. Like part of Paolo's problem, like Paolo's got a really bright future. Part of the problem, if you want to call it a problem, with the Magic currently, is that there's way too big a burden on Paolo. Like he should not be trying to create shots for everybody else and create shots for himself. It leads to him taking a lot of bad shots. And that's part of why their offense is bad. And by the way, one other thing to clear up. There's been a lot of chatter the past couple of days about how the Cavs and the Bucks tanked the last day of the season. No. That is not what happened.
No, the Bucks stunk. They didn't tank.
That's right. Milwaukee tried to beat Orlando. And by the way, if Orlando had lost that game, they'd have finished eighth. They'd have been in the play-in. Sixers would have been sixth. Orlando, who knows if Orlando gets out of the play-in. Orlando's got a home game against Milwaukee. Yes, Giannis is hurt, but Dame Lillard played. Chris Middleton played. Brooke Lopez played. They tried to win that game. And the Magic beat the brakes off them in that game to win the division and get themselves a playoff berth. And to your point, McMahon, yes, this series was ugly offensively for Orlando. Yes, they didn't play their best today in the second half after building a big lead. This year's a huge success for Orlando. Huge success for Jamal Mosley, for those young players to get in the playoffs. Jalen Suggs had been banged up the first couple years of his career. He played a ton of games. He was great. Obviously, they got to get Franz Wagner's shot worked out. His three-point shot dropped off a ton this year, but he is a really promising player.
All of his shooting. You know, Wagner is extension eligible, and they're going to extend him, I'm sure. But that's a guy who a year ago you might have thought was a max candidate.
Yeah, there's probably going to be some negotiating there.
Yeah, I mean, he shot 30% on jumpers this season, and he was, you know, he's 1 of 15 today. I mean,
it's a ruffian. I like him as your third best offensive player.
If he gets back to shooting in the mid to high 30s like he did the last couple of years from three, he's a totally different player. If he's shooting 28% from three, that's a completely different player.
And look, that's why like they're coming up in the Paul George discussions. Like that would make a ton of sense for them. You know, I think we could at least have a conversation about whether a Trae Young would make sense for them. I think that would depend on how do you feel it would fit culturally with what they've established as being a tough, hard-nosed defensive team. And I think also obviously would depend on what you'd have to give up as far as the trade goes, but they need a best offensive player, or at least a guy who can be 1A, 1B with Paolo.
Right. They also have two lottery picks that they basically, Anthony Black didn't do much this year. He had some moments when there was injuries and he started, but he was okay. And then
there's another guy that's a defense first player who's got some real potential, but has got a lot of work to do offensively.
Yeah, and then Jet Howard, who basically didn't play all year. But those, when we talk about possible trade things that they can do, they have some young, like lottery picks that other teams might have interest in, plus all of their picks going forward, plus cap space. Like they're holding a hand to improve. The Cavs have done all their trading.
I disagree with that, but it's premature to discuss Cavs summer, but if they decide to, one, let's say they get to decide which trades they want to discuss and they're not forced into discussing a trade. But if they dangle Jared Allen in the trade market, I think there's going to be some interesting possibilities there. If they decide to take the windy advice that they hear, they're tuning in that radio show every week, three times a week, isn't it?
They're not listening to me because I was advocating for Sam Merrill to play and all he did was score 8 points on two shots in the first half and then never saw the second half. So I
literally changed the game when he came in.
You keep telling them only play one center at a time. And if they decide to commit,
well, they played one center the last three games because Allen was out and
look,
they had great paint scoring because, but the rest of the scoring was eek.
Hey Pelicans, you guys looking to move Brandon Ingram? How would you feel about Jared Allen? Let's have a discussion.
Well,
there would be possibilities there, and that one, just to be clear, is my idea. It's not like I'm hearing this or that.
Yeah, I will say a couple things about the Cavs. I think Paolo had 28 points in the first half in this game, and the Cavs at halftime assigned
It was like 24 or 25, something like that. It was a little less.
They signed Isaac Okoro to him in the second half, and the Cavs played good defense. Literally, the Magic missed 15 shots in the paint in the second half. Like,
Isaac Okoro had the game of his life. He was great.
The Cavs were contesting. You know, Evan Mobley, we can talk about his offensive shortcomings. He had 16 rebounds in this game and was just totally contested.
Yeah, and Orlando, he played a tremendous defensive game. I mean, Orlando kept driving into him and getting nowhere over and over and over again. He played phenomenally at that.
He's also not a bad offensive rim running center. He's a bad offensive power forward. He's not a bad offensive center.
There was a lot of excitement in Cleveland when he made 2 3 pointers in the first quarter of game one.
First 5 minutes of the game.
And it was like, oh, this is Evan Mobley unlocked. And he made one the rest of the series. And I don't even think he took any of the last three or four games.
He was one for nine after the first 5 minutes of the game in game one. He didn't take one over the final four games of the series. And today he had 5 field goals and 6 turnovers and had several really bad turnovers in the paint. He's still a pretty mediocre to bad offensive player, but he's a really good defensive player. And he was a huge part of them winning today because he was awesome at the rim.
5 blocks and defended many other shots.
Yeah, he was awesome.
Isaac Okoro taking Paolo Banchero, giving up significant size there. Okoro is a restricted free agent in the offseason. I think the Cavs got to bring him back because he's one of the better.
Well, they ought to be able to sign. I mean, listen, they ought to be able to sign him for not very much. I mean, there shouldn't be a huge market for his services as a one-way defensive player.
The Cavs have to deal with, before they can answer any questions, before they can entertain any trade for anybody on the roster, before they can entertain anything, they got to hear from Donovan Mitchell on the contract extension.
Exactly.
And he's under contract for next year and then has a player option, but it's all going to come down to whether he says yes or no on this. And he has said nothing but good things and nothing but positive things, which is what the Cavs fans will bring up when you talk about
this. Nothing
but
vague things.
But this is what he specializes in. Now, I will say that I thought his knee, he was limping around pretty good on Friday, but two things about that. Number one, he wasn't on the injury report. So if you're not on the injury report, I mean, LeBron was on the injury report for 70 consecutive games. He's on the injury report, number one. Number two, if you watched him play, he's moving side to side, changing directions, stopping, starting. He was pretty healthy in this series, which is why he averaged 29 points. So,
the injury report thing, though, like they took Luke off the injury report. His knee's bothering him. It just doesn't.
I understand. I'm just saying, like,
availability.
No, I understand.
I'm just doubt about it, I should say.
He's obviously got something wrong with his left knee that's slowing him down and bothering him. And he's being careful landing on it. But he was damn good.
Oh, for sure. Games.
So,
And I tell you, I think it really bothers him the most when he walks right by the camera in the tunnel. This really tightens up. But no, there's no doubt that, like, there's something bothering him there for sure. But the guy, he's their only offense right now. I mean,
Darius Garland was awful.
Insane. The man scored 50 points and they didn't get to 100.
Yeah.
Yeah. Darius Garland did have a big three quarters on Friday. He was MIA in the fourth quarter, like, nowhere.
And he was MIA this entire game to the point where he hit 1-3 when they were up like 10 late in the fourth quarter. And it turned into the most Herculean moment in the history of time.
It pretty much sealed the game. I don't know if they were up 10, but it sealed the game.
My point is this guy is signed to a max contract treated like it was a guy coming in at the end of the bench to hit a shot when the game was over. Like,
he is
not producing at the level necessary. And by the way, it's a reminder,
the series, to win a game, Darius Garland is going to have to earn his money against the Celtics to win a game in that series.
Well, and listen, the Darius Garland max extension, the automatic max extension for a guy who, let's be honest, is a good player, but it's not really a max player, is a reminder that in the current environment in particular, can't just be willy-nilly giving out max extensions to players. And for both Orlando with Franz Wagner and with Cleveland with Evan Mobley, two really good young prospects, coming into their extension discussions this summer, there should be negotiations about those extensions. And they should not just be giving extensions to those guys at the max, because they would be among the worst players to this point to sign max extensions over the last 13, 14 years. You're talking like Andrew Wiggins, you're talking Michael Porter Jr., you're talking Garland, all guys who are good players, fringy all-star players at times. Andrew Wiggins made one, Darius Garland's made one, but Andrew Wiggins, you got to be careful. Just
listen, the freaking Warriors PR staff that's won that award, postseason award, PBWA award a million times, that's their most monumental achievement, is getting Andrew Wiggins an all-star berth.
Well, and to be clear, listen, because I know people in Cleveland are going to freak out me taking some shot at Evan Mobley again. Like, Giannis didn't sign a max extension. Rudy Gobert didn't sign a max extension. This is not some declaration that, like, these guys aren't good, but you should be, as the team going into restricted free agency and going into extension talks, the whole point of it is you should be getting something back in the extension negotiation. It's like, hey, we're giving you all this money ahead of time. We're taking on some risk, and say something happens, let's get something back for it. That's all.
Winnie's going to be throwing out the first pitch for those old Akron Rubber Ducks. They're going to be throwing tomatoes at us.
Bontemps has come to Cleveland this week, guys.
I sure am. But again, though, it is worth repeating that with Jared Allen out, Evan Mobley played 41 minutes, and with the Magic coming in the paint all game with really nothing to do but come in the paint and fling the ball at the rim, he was a mountain in the paint, and they couldn't score on him. And that's a big part of why Cleveland won the game.
So he's good center.
Injury report will be interesting to see if Jared Allen is going to be able to go by Tuesday. As somebody had a rib injury this year, I kind of get it. And obviously, Porzingis is going to be out. I would guess he's probably going to be out for this whole series.
I think Jared Allen is going to be in danger of aggravating that rib injury on a boat soon anyways. So
I would be very surprised if Kristaps Porzingis plays in this series based off of his comments the other day. I think we're looking at the conference finals.
Well, you look at it's the same injury as Giannis had. I don't know about severity and all that, but it's a week injury. It's not a day's injury.
Right. Yep. Giannis said he was kind of close, but only started running after like three.
He started running on Sunday, two and a half weeks after he got hurt.
Does that mean Doc wasn't completely?
I think he wasn't. There's been bolder face lies in the coaching career.
I mean, listen, I didn't think that Dame was going to play in game six, and he played. So,
So I will say this, the Cavs have scored some victories over the Celtics over the last 2 years. They've played them close generally. Earlier this year, last time they played, they came back from 22 down in the fourth quarter. Max Strus hit an 80-foot shot to win the game.
Dean Wade will probably not, but that was a different game. That was against Dallas. Dean Wade went for 20 points in the fourth quarter. Mavericks.
Didn't the Cavs? No. The Cavs made a huge comeback on Boston, like 22
points. Brian, you're not listening to me. Max Strus's
59-footer was against the Mavericks.
Yes. Max Strus hit a three-quarter court shot to win the game against Dallas. The Cavs came back from down 20 or 22 in the fourth quarter to beat Boston. Not because of Max Strus. It was because Dean Wade went 7-for-7 and scored 20 points. Dean Wade, who was hurt and will probably not be playing, by the way, is also a very significant loss for the Cavs and part of their issues at the moment.
Yes,
because
yes.
when he's out there, he would have been playing in the Isaac Okoro spot.
With all due respect to Marcus Morris, the Cavs started Marcus Morris in this series.
Well, and Isaac Okoro wouldn't have been starting if Dean Wade was healthy, because then he would have been their stretch four, and he's a good player.
Right.
Hey, Markieff might get some minutes for the Mavericks.
The Morris brothers are alive and well in this second round.
They sure are, as are the Cavs.
All right. Let's check out today's Reliable Connection, brought to you by Xfinity. And the Reliable Connection so far right here in New York City has been the Villanova trio. Jalen Brunson, Josh Hart, Dante DiVincenzo. And those three will be back on the court on Monday night to face the Indiana Pacers. The city is aglow with Rangers and Knicks excitement. Madison Square Garden was all lit up tonight when I arrived.
I thought the city was aglow because Bontemps was assigned the Boston-Cleveland series in a couple weeks.
Come on now.
Yeah.
Come on now. They should be happy to have me around. They just won their series in 2 years in a row for the first time in 24 years of me covering it.
Brunson coming off as hot of a streak is in the playoffs as we've seen, at least in the first round, in a while. So we'll see if he can keep that going. It was such a high-intensity series against the 76ers. interesting to see if the Knicks can keep that energy, keep that emotion up in a very, very different type of team, trying to do very, very different type of things. Total mismatch of styles here. The Pacers want to run. The Knicks want to slow it down. It'll be very much a fight of wills here. The Knicks want to execute in the half court. Pacers aren't always great defensively in the half court, although Miles Turner has his moments. So, Bontemps, the Knicks are not as heavily favored as the, I think I saw, what did I see on ESPN bet? It was like, I don't even remember what I saw the Celtics were. It was some ungodly amount of money. The Celtics, you'd have to bet on the Celtics to.
Well, the Celtics are favored to win game one by 11.5 points. So that's where we're at with that.
Knicks, strong favorites against the Pacers. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I picked them to win in five. They should win the series pretty comfortably. If you, again, we talked about how the Cavs and Magic both didn't cover themselves in glory necessarily, and Cleveland had its issues in advancing. Indiana had plenty of issues in advancing, despite playing a Milwaukee team that had a hobbled or missing Damian Lillard, didn't have Giannis Antetokounmpo at all, and had Chris Middleton playing very heroically, but also through multiple injuries and, you know, really being banged up. And they still gave him a lot of trouble throughout that series. The Knicks, with their size, with their physicality, should be able to control the paint like they did against Philly. You know, I think the one way I think this series can be really competitive is if Tyrese Haliburton looks like the guy he did before he got hurt in January. He did not really look like that guy in the series. He's also now dealing with these back spasms or lower back issues that hampered him a bit. At times, towards the end of the Milwaukee series, he looked better in Game 6, but...
Yeah, he's listed on the injury report. It's questionable.
Yeah, I mean, if he's not the best player on the court, they're going to get smoked in the series.
Yeah, no doubt.
And Jalen Brunson, as we talked about the other day, is going to be plenty motivated to beat Indiana. And I think, you know, some of the stuff that Indiana was able to do against Milwaukee, the TJ McConnell stuff, some of those things I don't think are going to work nearly as well against this Knicks team that's much better defensively than Milwaukee. And I just don't anticipate Indiana being able to control the pace and control the score like they're going to need to win the series. I do think they'll probably have a game where they win, where they shoot really well from three and they score a ton of points and the Knicks can't keep up. But I also think especially game one for Indiana coming to the Garden and playing the Knicks in the first game, I suspect the Knicks will win that game pretty comfortably. And that'll be a pretty big adjustment for the Pacers, and then we'll see how game two goes. But yeah, I like the Knicks pretty comfortably to win this one.
Well, Jackson put the ESPN bet odds in there. Knicks -270 to win the series. The Celtics in their series -1800. Means you gotta bet $1,800 to win 100.
Yeah.
And we talked about this the other day. I 100% agree with you. Tyrese Haliburton has to be the best player in the series for the Pacers to have any chance. The first half of this season, he was playing at that kind of level to where you thought that was a possibility, has not since the hamstring injury. And, you know, we discussed, and the old aggregators got a hold of this one. We discussed the Rick Carlisle Brunson history and their, you know, their last thing. And of course, Brunson was asked about it and asked, acted like, I never even, like, what are you talking about?
Rick who?
Yeah, and Brunson, I told you then, Brunson would want no part of that.
Of course,
But
you know, actions over words, ladies and gentlemen.
Tyrese Haliburton's part of that storyline too, because the Mavericks,
they were trying to trade Jalen Brunson to get the pick.
Yep. They absolutely tried to trade, and they tried to trade Brunson several times. But like Rick has talked about, how the Mavericks tried their butts off to get Haliburton in that draft, and that's true. They had Brunson, the 18th pick, which ended up being Josh Green, not like Tyrese Maxey or Desmond Bane, but Josh Green, and then the 31st
still a solid pick. Player. Yeah,
and that's what they were dangling. The funny thing is, they dangled it to everybody before Haliburton went off the board, including the Knicks.
Yeah,
who were like, "Nope, we love this Obi Toppin kid. We're
they
taking
were
him.
So excited to take Obi Toppin."
And now,
who,
where's
by
Obi
the way,
Toppin? Of course, he's in Indiana. So
who, by the way, all you kinds know, of- Obi Toppin had issues internally with the Knicks last year. They next gave him away. And so
he
I don't
had
think
the game of his and he had the game of his career in game six. To help
look, and I'm not saying Obi Toppin's going to control the series, but you know, as long as you're tracking beef, his brother is on the Knicks.
Yeah, whether we call it beef or whether we just call it like interesting ties between these teams.
Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff to watch.
If he throws down a key dunk, he might glance sideways over at a
certain
individual.
Listen, you can't just don't stare at the player. because that's a technical foul these days. It might get rescinded the next day like Ants did, but if you stare at a guy after having a hell of a play, no, no, no. Now you
Courtney,
can.
Courtney Kirkland, not great. Not a great look.
You can pivot on your butt and, you know, double pistols at a guy. Jamal Murray did that after Ant got teed up, several plays later. But, yeah, I agree, and I'm glad Barkley blasted him. Dude, no taunting technical fouls allowed in the the game's officiated differently is in terms of what's an actual foul, also technical fouls. Taunting, first of all, should be encouraged. It's entertaining. Right. Should be encouraged all season long.
Certainly not after game two. Playoffs. No taunting technicals after game two. Even if you're gonna do it in game one, not after game two. Get it out early.
No. The most overrated thing in sports is sportsmanship. Stop trying. This ain't the Boy Scout.
That is a McMahon special right there.
Yes, ain't the that's damn right Boy there, Scouts. Right there at the height requirement.
Badges somewhere else.
Right there at the height requirement on the McMahon list of things he says.
McMahon just beats up on his twin boys, and he's like, I got a foot on him, and I'm going to dunk on their head.
No. I'm not allowed to go in the paint unless I'm down six. I just light their butts up from outside. Now, the three-point line's the crack in the road. They thought that was to their advantage. Oh, nah, I live out there, baby. You can't right over your little five-foot head, you little punk kids.
Are any of you surprised at home listening that McMahon gloats about beating his boys? Mama, no, you shouldn't be.
Game winners, and I make them run it and tell their mama how I hit it. Oh, yeah. Oh, tell about that lefty hook from 20 feet. Tell about that step back, baby. Yes.
Oh, go report on it. Go give the report. Oh, also, I'd like to ban the phrase marginal contact.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, I made my thoughts clear on all this nonsense the other day. Yeah. Get rid
marginal
of
marginal contact. Joker does not have a new 6-inch wound on his arm. Has to be marginal.
He does always have those giant gashes on his arm. My God.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. All right, the Red River series.
Can be a good one.
I-35
special. Gonna be a great one.
Gonna be a great one.
And by the way, especially now that the Timberwolves are ahead 1-0, is it fair to say that any of these four teams can win the West? Can we see any of these four teams win the West?
Sure.
Obviously,
why
Denver's.
Not? Yeah.
Denver's. Why not? Denver's. Yeah. You know, favored and still in my mind, but like Dallas honestly, is good.
Dallas is good, and this is not going to be a popular thing in my neighborhood, but I do think Dallas might have the least chance of the four teams left, which shouldn't be too controversial. I mean, they are the lowest seed left, but Luka, the other day after they close out game six, when by his standards, he wasn't great, like, he had another rough shooting day. Kyrie, closer Kyrie was sensational. But Luka was exhausted, sitting in front of his locker, talking with us. And I said, any progress with the knee? And I don't quote, but it's pretty close to quote. He basically said, it's not going to be right until I rest this summer. So
he ain't resting this summer. He's trying to qualify Slovenia for the Olympics.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. Like, when are you going to rest this summer? He's hoping probably after the Olympics. But anyways, he basically said, look, the knee's not going to be right for the rest of the playoffs. So that's obviously concerning. We'll see if he can find his three-point touch. He shot, I think, 23% from three for that series. We'll see, because the knee, his step back is about really creating a lot of force as he changes directions on that step back, creating separation and getting lift, and it just hadn't been there. So that's one reason to doubt. And then Maxi Kleber is not a big name, but You know, as one person on the Mavs said, he is kind of their secret weapon in the playoffs. He was a huge part of their Western Conference Finals run. He was a key part of this last series. He's out at least this series.
Yep.
And if they go
3 weeks, it'll be longer. That's well, what they said, at least three.
Reevaluate in 3 weeks.
That means he's out till the finals. I mean, it's realistically.
Well, the thing about it is like he gave Jason Kidd options because yes. There were some times where he would rely on Gafford and Lively, and other times when they weren't playing as well or they needed more floor spacing, like that he could change gears.
And not only that, he gives him lineup versatility because he can play as the stretch big, right? And they can switch everything stretch big, or he can play the four. And he's played more four than five since they've had the tag team of rim runners. You know, people jumped on Jay Kidd for, was it game four, I believe, when Harden had his little floater clinic and the percentages didn't work out in the Mavs' favor. Maxi was playing the five there. Fans jumped on him. Whether he was admitting he was wrong or not, Jay Kidd did not play Maxi at all at the five the next game, but he played, I don't remember how many minutes, he played 20 minutes or so, 20 plus minutes. At the four, those have been really effective lineups. So he allows the Mavericks to both play small or to play really big. And, dude, he is maybe their best defender. If he's not, he's behind only Derrick Jones Jr. Stats Williams special here. This playoff, opponents shot 29.8% when Maxi was the primary defender, 14 of 47. Second best in the 2024 playoffs among guys who defended at least 40 shots, trailing only Jalen Suggs, who we've talked about Suggs and just how great of an on-ball defender he is. And then, you know, Maxi's three is the weirdest thing. He can be in the worst shooting slump in the world, and it's like the playoffs start, and suddenly the guy, you know, he's 10 of 18 from three in that series. So that injury is a tough injury. And, you know, but it really comes down to this. If Luka plays at his normal level, the Mavericks absolutely can beat anybody. It's going to be tough to beat anybody left in the West unless he's able to play at an MVP level.
Can I ask you a question about that series, McMahon? Because I was talking about this with a couple scouts today, especially with Maxi out, even though he wasn't going to start. What do you think the opening matchups are going to be in the game? So for people that haven't necessarily watched super close, obviously on the Thunder, you've got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Josh Giddey, Jalen Williams, Chet Holmgren, and Lu Dort starting for them. For the Mavs, they've been starting. I assume they're going to Luka Doncic, Kyrie Irving, Derek Jones Jr., PJ Washington, and then Daniel Gafford. What do we think the starting opening matchups in game one are going to look like with those?
That's interesting. So the other interesting thing here is, you know, forget like the regular season series. The Thunder won 3 of 4.
Yeah, but Luka didn't. I know he didn't play the last game.
The first game they played was Kyrie was out.
Luka, yeah, the Mavs have totally changed their team since all that stuff.
Yeah, Luka came back from the game off when his daughter was born. The Mavericks got down 30. They went on a 30-0 run to take the lead, and then the Thunder won the game. The second game was right after the trade deadline. This is the only time Luka and Kyrie both played. That's literally Gafford and Lively, or not Lively, Gafford and Washington, P.J. Washington's first game. The Mavs smoked him on a Sunday afternoon. And then the next one was when Luka sat out on a back-to-back at Mavs. A long winning streak ended that night at when they made the lineup change, that long winning streak. And then the last one was the last game of the regular season. The Mavs sat their top eight players. So again, the only time that was full strength was when the Mavs smoked them, one game sample size, but it was absolutely a game where the Mavericks put a center on Josh Giddey and said, please shoot those threes. We love when you shoot those threes.
Josh Giddey did have a good series against the Pelicans.
He did. Josh Giddey at the end of that series had the best plus minus in these playoffs. He doesn't right now, but at the end of that series, he did. He also was 8 of 12 on threes in the two games in New Orleans. So I think they'll at least start like that, and we'll see if Giddey makes them pay. Derrick Jones Jr., again, is their best defensive player. I think he's going to get the Shai Gilgeous-Alexander assignment. Tell you what, man. Kyrie might have been their second best on-ball defender in the starting lineup. So, I don't know. Jalen Williams,
he's got to take Dort because he's not big enough to guard Jalen Williams. So that's...
Yeah, my guess is PJ Washington gets Jalen Williams, and that leaves – does that leave Luka on Chet? I don't know. Maybe Pete? I don't know.
This is my point. I think that the key to me, the key to the series, because this is the same conversation I had with a couple of people today, which because we started going through it, because at first it was like, well, Daniel Gafford's going to be guarding Giddy and they'll just let him roam around. But like,
right.
Then you've got Chet just sort of flying around at 7-1 and there's not really anybody to guard. So it is going to be interesting to me to see how Dallas matches up because it's not a clean. For all this talk, we've talked a lot about eventually, is Josh Giddey going to get pulled out of the starting lineup for Oklahoma City? Dallas has done a lot of nice stuff for them. They've done a lot of nice stuff reworking their team, and they've got obviously playing really well, and they could certainly win this series. But there are some awkward matchups here for them to sort out, and it's going to be really interesting to see what Jason Kidd decides to do because I don't think there's obvious answers, and there's a few different ways they could go potentially.
Yeah, and that game when it was P.J. Washington and then Daniel Gafford's Dallas debut, they both came off the bench. They both made an impact in that game, but it was coming off the bench. So it's not like we've got any sample size that tells you how this starting five match up. That the one thing, like Derrick Jones Jr. will get Shea. I'm pretty confident saying that. And then on the other side, Lou Dort's going to get Luka. And like, boy, good thing the Mavericks finished that series off in six instead of having to fly to L.A., try to win a game.
Kidding.
Then,
and fly back to OKC.
Luka, as we talked about on Friday, Spot, like they had to take care of business and get that break. That was a big, especially with Luka's knee. It was a huge thing for them.
Mark Dagenault known for being tactical.
Yeah.
And they've had a long time. I think they've had 8-9 days off.
Yeah.
Had a long time to work on some tactics here. I mean, the guy's the coach of the year for a reason. He's got 9 or 10 different guys he can play. He's not going to play them all, but he can play different groupings of them. Wouldn't be surprised if they've got some stuff up their sleeve. They may not even show it in game one, but they've had, they've been scheming. Been scheming. So,
but yeah, Lou Dort versus Luka is like, tune in. That's going to be a fun one.
Brandon Ingram is still in the hole. From now, what Lou Dort did to him.
Dort ain't pushing Luke around like he did Brandon Ingram, to say the least. Like, it's a little different task here. But
the thing is, the Thunder have tremendous perimeter defenders.
Yeah, and Jalen Williams will get Kyrie, I'm pretty sure.
And Jalen Williams can guard Luka. They can rotate
they can throw
guys.
Kaysen Wallace in there to throw on Kyrie. They
absolutely.
On Kyrie, not on Luka. He's too small for Luka.
No, but for Kyrie specifically, they got a lot of guys that could throw at Luka. Like they're as well equipped as any team in the league to guard Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving over seven games. I'm not saying they're going to stop them, but they got a lot of options. Right,
and actually, Wiggins is a valuable player for them. Like
the
I
best
mean,
Wiggins in the league this year.
Yeah, yeah. Aaron Wiggins that are not sure who we're talking about. He's a solid.
If you don't know who he's talking about, you may know who we're talking about after this. Aaron Wiggins, you know, he's their seventh or eighth man, but like they've done something there. That's a draft pick, another guy that they've developed. And Dagenault really trusts him. He's given him a bigger role than I ever thought.
We have joked a lot about how people have been very quick to sort of say, oh, yeah, the Thunder are a good matchup for X team in the playoffs, or oh, they're the team everybody wants to play. They're really good. And they showed that in the first round. And I mean, I think your point earlier, this isn't like the East where there are two prohibitive favorites.
Yeah.
I picked both these series to go seven games with the home team winning, basically just because I think it's the easy thing to do in a toss up series. Say, well, the home team will probably win game seven at home. I don't have a good feel for who's going to win either one. And you could certainly tell me Dallas or Minnesota could both win this series and win the next one. But it's like, these are going to be two live, awesome, hopefully 6 or 7 game knockdown drag out fights. Cause these teams are all really, really good. And the matchups are really interesting in both series, as we saw in game one of the other one. And like we just talked about, there's a lot of interesting cross match stuff going on in this Thunder Mavs series. That's going to be fun to watch. And then you've also got the Shea versus Luka matchup. And just like all year, we talked about which of those guys was going to win MVP, or could they finish second, or where would they land? And they're obviously both fantastic players, and it's going to be a lot of fun to see them go back and forth for hopefully 6 or 7 games.
I'm curious to see with Chet. He didn't shoot the ball well in the New Orleans series. Now he's had that time going into, and he played 82 games. I think he was worn down.
Very proudly, he played that too.
Now he's had the time before the playoffs started, played 4 games, and then he's had another week here.
Good point.
And he get, you know, that little lift under on his 3-point shot again. But again, getting back to Maxey's absence, the Mavs don't have that proven option to pull Chet away from the rim. Now, can Gafford and Lively beat him up in terms of the offensive glass and stuff? I think they're going to have to. But yeah, very curious to see what kind of impact Chet can make in the series.
All right. Well, we're in the nitty gritty now. So here we go. Let's strap it up. Let's get
You're
out there.
You're forgetting something. You're forgetting something.
Never forget Cojones Factor.
It's the end of the first round of the playoffs, Brian. Oh, what is that? What time is that, McMahon? What time is it?
It's time for.
I was forgetting it.
Cojones Factor player of the first round. Don't you?
That's
ever
right.
Disrespect.
That's right.
Oh, my God. Okay.
I took care of you, buddy.
The floor is yours. You did. Many apologies.
Okay. Senor. Well, I apologize to Tyrese Cojones. Max. He only got the honorable mention. But if you don't advance, you ain't getting one of these little trophies that don't really exist, anyways. But I got to at least shout out Tyrese Maxey, DFW native, 7 points in the last 25 seconds to force OT in that game five, second in the league in clutch points with 26 in the first round, 26 clutch points efficiently in 26 minutes. Second,
he had seven in about 12 seconds.
25. That's what we just started with. Not
only, I
know,
but
just not listening.
Ahead. Sorry.
Just not listening. Let the man cook. All right.
Heavens to buds. All right. Second only to the guy who's getting the brass balls, baby. The third place finisher. We've talked about him. Rick Carlisle didn't want to play him in the game seven. Now he's
got to play. He's only getting the bronze?
Now he's got to play him in the second round. I'm talking about Jalen Brunson. Let all players.
The brass. Controversial. This is a controversial
the brass.
Choice.
Weren't you listening? The brass.
Yeah, listen, we call it brass.
He's third. No, either way, third place. Controversial choice.
Clutch points, 31. Clutch assists, 5. Both led the league in the first round. I was in 31 minutes, but the only he was 10 of 26 in the clutch. I mean, he hit some big shots, but he wasn't efficient.
Ball that bounced on the rim and no bonus points for that.
This is a wild decision.
He had that
can't believe it.
Turnover in OT of game 5. Listen, the man's getting the brass, whatever you want to call it. Listen, if you want to argue the two guys that I got ahead of him, okay.
I haven't thought about it, so I'm curious. I just assumed he was winning because I will admit I was biased because I was watching that series that closely. Oh, so
with the silver, Franz Wagner.
No. This silver is a fella that we have talked about a lot. We're going to continue talking about. They're putting side-by-side clips of him and Michael Jordan, and just, do they move alike, including that dagger dunk.
Wait a second. Ant-Man is how many clutch points does Ant-Man have?
It ain't just about clutch. It's clutch, it's swag, it's cojones. I know you don't know the definition. You have no idea what cojones means.
Settle down.
Hey, that dagger dunk to finish off the sweep in Phoenix, the kiss
that,
the rim.
That was a big time dunk. That was a big time dunk.
And he only played 3.5 clutch minutes in that series because, boy, did he just spank the Suns.
That fourth quarter of game 4.
That was great.
That he gets bonus points,
dude,
for that fourth.
11 points, 4-4 from the floor to sweep the Suns in a Matt Ishbia's embarrassment of a press conference. Are you kidding me, dude? That dagger dunk. That was the signature moment of the first round. 22-year-old Anthony Edwards.
The signature moment of the first round.
Yes. 22 Anthony, the How biggest
about that Tyrese round, Maxey 35
the
footer.
Biggest story of the first round was Anthony Edwards planting his flag saying, I'm one of those bleepity bleepities. Dude, he set it takes some cojones to do what he did in the opener of that game, which he's lighting it on fire, splashing a three in KD's face and barking at his childhood idol with a big old smile on his face on the way down the floor, talking all that trash. That's cojones. My friends, Anthony.
All right, so who's winning now,
dude? The guy who hit two game winners in the final seconds of one series. Mm. Are you kidding
Pretty
me?
Pretty big,
Jamal Murray, baby. Mm. 15 points on 6 of 7 shooting in 9 clutch minutes. Two game winners. The first, he stunk for 3 quarters in that game. They're down 20. Oh, let me just take over this game and cap it by splashing a three in almost Dunn's face. I mean, Anthony Davis's face. Finnick Davis exhausted on the bench where he's muttering about Darvin Ham while the Nuggets are celebrating around him. Are you kidding me? That was a moment. And then,
oh God, just
and by the way,
we started with ethering of the Cavs, we're entering with ethering the Lakers.
He had a crazy shot in possession before that. I'm sitting there watching this game in LA,
the pull up jumper to tie it, right?
Yeah, I'm watching the game in LA, and like
with a calf injury,
the Lakers, no, this was pre calf injury.
Oh,
but the Lakers, this is game two. The Lakers fans are like moaning and groaning. I'm sitting there going, let Joker touch it. But nope, he just dribbled, boo-boo, and hit two crazy shots. And then,
by the way, on the second game winner, where he did the step back from about 17 feet, Joker's wide open.
Yeah.
Wide open.
Was the first game winner. That was the game two.
The first game winner, he was like towards the baseline, fading away, couldn't even see it go in. The second game,
we're talking about the game, the series clincher.
Yeah, I don't even know where Jokic was on game two. Maybe he was open then too, but I just know on the series clincher, Jokic is standing there at 17 feet unguarded. So even if AD was in his uniform, he could have just dumped it off to Jokic. They had completely executed the pick and roll.
Right. But Murray had his moment, closed the series out. Yeah. You hit two game winners, including the series clincher in a series, you're going to get the Giannis factor player of the first round.
All right, fair enough. Fair enough.
I'm glad you guys approve.
I always approve of your choices.
Yeah.
You're the master on it.
You were muttering about Brunson in third place, you New York homer.
I'm just playing. I was just playing up.
Kicked out of the city. You're not allowed back in.
Just playing up the drama, pal. I was the one who got, I remember, I was the only reason we ended up doing it because Brian was going to steamroll you out of here to get to sleep sooner.
I did. In all honesty, it's almost midnight. I have to go buy a brush.
Oh, wait a second. So how long is it going to take you to get that brush? Because we need an accurate windy sleep update. And do you have to get up?
Yes, I have get up in the morning.
Oh, boy.
But, my...
The quaff has to be taken care of. You know,
this is a potentially two-week road trip for the second round here.
So that's a finger comb job.
This is.
That's pretty good, man.
I came off the plane. I wore a hat. I went to get my brush, and it wasn't there.
Oh, boy. So, that must have been a tough moment.
We're heading off to Dwayne Reed here in a few minutes.
Is your typical, you have like a gold and diamond hairbrush, right?
No, but here's what happened. Last season, or maybe it was even this season, somebody was commenting on the hair product that I...
Oh, baby. Winnie's going to get a whole box of brushes.
Well, I did. Well, so here's the thing.
A box of product.
I got a box of product.
What brand is that?
From Aveda. They were very nice. They sent me a whole box of product.
Trying to get some more.
Unfortunately, they were very nice to reach out because I complimented them for, keeping me, because I have these, 34-hour days that I got to keep.
Your life is so hard.
And they were very nice to reach out and say, oh, thank you for mentioning her. We're so happy we can do it. What can we send you? And I said the wrong product. And so they sent me like a year's supply of the product that I don't use.
Oh, no.
So
now he's trying to get the right product.
Well,
this is some next level work right here.
I don't think I said it on the pod. I think I said it on TV. I don't think Aveda's listening to the pod. But anyway,
they're missing out.
So I'm just like out of position with my hair. I'm out of position. You know, you gotta. You know, these guys are fighting through injuries. You got to fight through this stuff. So if my hair is a little bit off on get up tomorrow, you'll know that I couldn't get a brush.
You know where I'm struggling? Like I can't tie a tie for crap. The IT department wants me to wear a tie on these, now I'm doing a lot of TV in the playoffs. And like, it's all like, the knot's bad. It's a bad knot. It's like cockeyed. And I did like last year during, and no, it's not, it's crooked. And I did so game one of the playoffs last year, I think it was an afternoon game. And so we're out, I'm meeting with a bunch of the LA writers and Dan.
Oh my God.
Wakey, little bleepity blappity. I'm up on sports and he goes, hey, you look like a guy who just got done with a random court appearance. I got self-conscious to the point where before the day of game two, the morning of game two, we got a bunch of TV. I give old Mac 10 a call. Listen, Tin's a skilled man. You look at those ties, baby.
They are well double.
McSeven seed, double remember. McSeven
I think
seed.
I know what exquisite
means. Yeah, McSeven seed somehow drew covering this Nuggets Wolves series.
Oh, yeah. He's been on that Nuggets bandwagon since the bronze broom sweep. But so I call Mac 10 and I said, hey, man, what room are you in? He told me. I said, I got to come see you. I need some help with these ties. And so he gives me a nice little knot, look great. Of course, he reported to several colleagues that his assistance was required.
Oh, I mean, well, your mistake was asking McMenamin to help you. Of course that was going to happen.
Man ties a good tie.
His cheeks were rosy and he was smiling that whole time. He knew he was so proud of himself.
Well, by the way, Jackson tells you the real solution, which is to go to the YouTubes and to check out Jason Tatum's instructional video on how to tie a tie from when he was about 15 years old.
Watch YouTube videos and it doesn't like... I think there's a psychological issue here. I never wore ties because I got shipped off to boarding school and we had to wear either ties or turtlenecks, but Manners Monday, you had to wear a tie. So I'd wear it once a week. I had to learn how to tie a tie. I was pissed off every time I had to put a tie on and it ain't been right since.
But well, that's the reason?
I believe it. I buy it. There's a lot of damage from those boarding school years we've discussed on the pod over the years, Bontemps.
Trust me, I've been here for it. I know.
Thank you for watching Hoop Collective, presented by Xfinity.
Adios, amigos.
Oh, God.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Requires Gemini device and additional paid subscriptions to watch Netflix and other third-party apps. Terms and restrictions apply.